morning, everyone. I'm Steve Martin. I'm here with Clyde Pilkington. Today, we're diving into one of the most challenging topics we face, the existence of evil. From wars and violence to the heartbreak and abuse of children and the devastation caused by natural disasters, we see suffering all around us. The question often arises, how can a loving God and a sovereign God allow such things to happen? So today, Clyde and I will explore the origin, purpose, and ultimate destruction of evil. We'll examine how, even in the darkest moments, evil serves as a tool in God's hands, working within his grand plan. This is a tough topic, but we believe that uncovering the truth about God's purpose for evil can bring peace and freedom to your hearts and minds. Let's get into it. So, Clyde, let's start off with what does the Bible say about the origin of evil? Was it a part of God's plan from the beginning?
Oh, yeah. Great place to start, right? And I love your introduction. You know, evil's everywhere. You know, you watch the local news at night and the evening news. It's news, but there's no good news generally in any of that news. It's all about the bad stuff that happened. And you did a great job surveying it there, you know. So your question there is, you know, does the Bible say anything about its origin? And it certainly does. You know, the Scripture is our guide and provides us with information to teach us how to understand God and understand our life and our circumstances, and evil playing such a huge role. The Scriptures surely do. Now, interestingly enough, the origin of evil is usually attributed to Satan by Christianity. And I think most of us thought, you know, that Satan's the one who introduced evil into creation. He's the one who's behind it all. But actually, the Scriptures would teach us, especially those who've come to a realization of who God really is and his absolute sovereignty. You know, Satan's only, he's merely an agent. He's merely a vessel, a vehicle for God's purposes. He's a servant of God, just like any other great servant that we're aware of in the Scriptures. And so the origin, the basis of people thinking that the origin of evil comes from Satan is by the manipulation of a couple Old Testament passages. We won't go into them in detail here. We have plenty of material on those subjects in books and in BSN articles. But those passages are Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28. And they've been manipulated to supposedly tell us about the history of Satan and how he came to be. And in fact, both passages are very specific. That they're dealing with the kings of Babylon and Tyre, respectively. You know, so we're going to be literalists when we come to study the Scriptures and believe that, you know, this is actually talking about two particular kings. But we're not left to our imagination and the manipulation of Scriptures when it comes to the origin of evil. Surprisingly, God himself speaks up. You know, nobody's speaking for God. God speaks up and addresses this issue pointedly. In Isaiah 45:7, he says, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Could there be a plainer statement in the Scriptures? You know, it would seem to be hid in the writings of the prophet Isaiah from Christianity and the world. You know, God put it right in there, you know. So you often wonder, I wonder about myself too, you know, all these campaigns that Christianity has, reading through the Bible in a year and all this stuff. You know, what happens when people read all these passages? You know, I think sometimes our minds turned off when we're reading. We don't even know what we're reading. reading. We're just getting, we got X number of verses to read today and we'll be done. You know, either that or we think, okay, well, it can't, I don't know what it says, but it can't mean what it obviously says. But it does mean, God means exactly, obviously, what he says here. You know, no one was, you know, none of us were at the beginning. So how do we know how all this got started? So we'd have to have a reputable source of knowing where evil started. And I'd say God's pretty good source for that. And he takes it on himself. I love the concordant. The concordant says, speaking of God, God speaking, former of light, former creator, former of light, creator of darkness, maker of good, creator of evil. I, Yahweh Elohim, make all these things. Now, interestingly, the word evil is used about 664 times in the scriptures. So it's a very prominent theme. I think it'd be important before we even continue our discussion today is to see what it means. So when we look up the Hebrew word for evil in the Strong's Concordance, it will tell us in the Strong's Concordance not only its meaning, which would, you know, be evil, but it also shows us all the ways the King James Version chose to translate the word, which is very interesting. Now, we really appreciate a version like the Concordant Version, which, you know, tries to keep one English word to one Hebrew or Greek word. But the King James is quite telling, though, nonetheless, by using a large amount of word to describe, or excuse me, to translate evil. I'm just going to read all the ways the King James Version translates evil. Adversary, affliction, calamity, displeasure, distress, grief, harm, heavy, hurt, ill, mischief, misery, sorrow, trouble, vexation, wickedness, wretchedness, wrong. Now, what's interesting, all those words are, especially together, are a beautiful description, a full description of what evil is. You know, evil isn't some kind of big sin. It is all of this difficulty and adversary and destruction and heaviness and brokenness. And God says, I created all that. And then, of course, I know your question is, you know, was it part of God's plan from the beginning? And of course, those of us who have been given the realization of the sovereignty of God, we know the answer to this. Yes, evil was a part of God's plan from the beginning. God does not make up things as he goes. He's not waiting and dependent on his creatures to make decisions and actions. And then he figures out, okay, now what am I going to do next? And what makes that very clear is, again, just a few verses after God tells us he creates evil, he says in Isaiah 46:10, declaring the end from the beginning and from the past things which were not done, saying, my pleasure shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. So everything that's going on in the universe is the absolute will of God. It's the absolute plan of God being carried out, and it brings him pleasure. We'll talk about this more, you know, as we discuss this, you know, but how, you know, we think, man, how can evil bring God pleasure? Well, when we step back and see the big picture, it becomes apparent to us. Also in Acts 15:18, it says, known from the ages to God are all his works. And since he declared he's the creator of evil, then yes, not only is he the origin of evil, but it was always in his plan. It didn't sneak in. He didn't say to Adam and Eve, okay, listen, if you mess up, I'm going to pour a bunch of evil on you. I'm gonna create some evil. It was always in his plan.
Yeah. So this is something that people ask all the time, especially as we record this. There's just been two recent really bad hurricanes, and people have died and billions of product. But how do you reconcile the idea of a sovereign and loving God with the existence of so much suffering and evil in the world?
Well, in your questionnaire, what I really like about it is that you have tied the sovereignty and love of God together. They are inseparable. God is absolutely, absolutely sovereign. That's what makes him God. You can't have a supreme deity without supreme control, absolute sovereignty. But what we learn from the scriptures is that God is love. He doesn't just love. He isn't just loving. He doesn't just express love. He is love. So it's important when we're trying to understand anything, especially evil, that we understand God is sovereign and that he's in control and that he is love. So his absolute essence is expressed in his fatherhood, that he is the God and Father of all. So this is a key. The realization, I'll say this, the realization of the absolute sovereignty of God and the fatherhood of God and that he's love is essential to have peace and understanding in the middle of evil, in the middle of calamity and suffering and destruction. It's essential. And if someone, people will say to us, are you trying to, what are you saying? And if they can't perceive that connection, it's because they don't yet have realization, and we can certainly sympathize with them. We've been there. We didn't always understand this. If those of us are listening, this is called the freedom journey. We're on this journey of freedom from certain things, freedom from our misunderstanding of evil in this particular podcast. But we didn't always have this, So if you're struggling with this, listening, we've been there, but a realization fixes this. For instance, here's a quote I thought about and saved so I could bring it up today, is that A.E. Knox says that the background of evil is needed for the display of God's goodness, grace, and glory in the eons of the future. So evil serves a very crucial role in God's plan of development, in his creation, in humanity, in the ages. It's important to understand that. Development, growth, progress are all painful. You can't have any of those without difficult. It's a part of what produces the development, the progress, the pain. The growth is pain, and it's a part of the maturing process. There's a couple examples that I always love to use. To me, they help me a lot. One is in the kitchen, and the culinary enterprise is all about radical destruction. We eat because of evil. And we eat because of this radical process of destruction that goes on. First and foremost, before we even get into the kitchen, there's the destruction of an animal or the destruction of some plants. There is destruction going on. And these items that have been destroyed are brought into the kitchen. And then listen for a moment. I've thought about it and made a list of them. Listen to a moment for the culinary terms we use of what the cook is supposed to be doing in the kitchen. Okay. They're supposed to be cracking and chopping and cutting and slicing and crumbling and crushing and dicing and mincing and grating and pounding and powdering and shredding and whipping and freezing and roasting and broiling and boiling and baking. Okay. You know, do we understand those are all those are all destructive words? They meet all those many ways that the word evil gets translated: affliction and adversary and calamity and distress and grief and harm, and you know, so it, and yet all that process brings us to a place. And if you have a master chef, a master cook, you know, like our wives are, and it comes time to eat, and we're thankful for all this evil that they did in the kitchen. Evil, you know, again, evil's not just equated to sin, friends. It's just all this, what in normal circumstances would be bad things to do, be, you know, bad just to go out and kill an animal, be bad to go out and destroy, you know, some plants and then do all these things to them. There's so many other examples. Another great example is building a house. You want to build a house. That's a good thing. You know, just like this meal, sitting down at a meal at a wonderful restaurant or our wives made, it's wonderful, wonderful. But evil was the whole process that got us there. Same thing with a house. House is a wonderful thing to live in and shelter you and raise your family in and so forth. And it is absolutely a environment of destruction and disruption that brought us there. You know, you go to a piece of land, you have to destroy the trees that are on there and cut them down. You've got to turn up the, bring bulldozers in and level the lot. You got to get backhoes and dig down into the ground and tear it all up and disrupt it. You got to move boulders, rocks out of the way that are in the way. And then to build the house somewhere else offsite, you know, somebody's got to be, disrupting the soil and baking clay and making bricks, and somebody's got to be blasting rocks into gravel, and somebody's got to be cutting down huge beautiful trees and taking them and cutting them and slicing them and making lumber, and somebody's got to be mining metals and heating them to great temperatures to make metal different. And so everything about the house building process is evil. It's destructive and painful. And it's just a process of degrading, and yet it's done to build up. So beautiful, beautiful illustrations that we know in our own life. God said, through Solomon in Ecclesiastes 1:13, it is an experience of evil. Elohim has given to the sons of humanity. It is a experience of evil that Elohim has given to the, God has given to the sons of humanity to humble them by it. So what is the purpose of evil? Well, you know what? We are, without the knowledge of God, without the knowledge of ourselves, we are keyed to self-interest, to pride, to arrogance, to self-ability. I will do this. I can do this. I'm the master of my own ship. Our first grandchild, when she was little, her name is Emma, and you could hardly do anything with her because she wanted to do it. And her favorite phrase was, she called herself by her own name. She'd say, Emma, do it. Emma, do it. You try to do Emma, do it. You know, like, and so maturity, especially spiritual maturity, is all about coming to the place where we realize, you know what, we can't do anything. we are nothing, and we need God. So it's this humbling thing that God puts us through. So he's bringing his whole creation. God's purpose is to bring his whole creation, to mature them, to develop them, to put us on the table, the culinary table, as a finished product, and to put us there where he's all in all. He's everything. Not any of us, and all of our fulfillments in him. So evil is used as a contrast to good, and is crafted to drive us and push us and grow us and mature us to him. So those are the purposes of the sovereign and loving God having this suffering in our world.
Yeah, we had a grandson who said, "I do it myself."
Yeah. Right.
Or, yeah, another one, "I got it." Yeah.
Isn't that, aren't those classic? You know, yeah. "I do it." "Emma do it." "I got it." You know, yeah. And this experience of evil that Elohim has given the sons of men to bring us to humility, we begin to get to this place where, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I don't have this. I don't got it. You got it. Yeah. And so it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Just as the destruction in the kitchen's a beautiful thing, and the destruction at a vacant lot is a beautiful thing when the house is finished and when the meal is done. So we have to see the bigger picture. You know, when you're watching the egg crack, if you don't know the big picture, it doesn't make any sense.
So can you give us some biblical examples of this? God using evil as a tool.
Yes. The greatest example of God using evil for good is the greatest evil that ever transpired in human history, which is Calvary. God used wicked hands. He used evil purposes, and he brought tremendous evil on his son. The most evil event of human history was Calvary, where God's son faced all that evil, all that adversary and affliction and calamity and displeasure and distress. And I'm just reading all those definitions from Strong now. You know, grief and harm and heaviness and hurt and all of this. But now if you ask me again, what is the greatest good, the most wonderful good of human history? You know what I'm going to say? Calvary. They both appear on the same day and in the same circumstances. And God reached the climax of his grace and love and goodness in the climax of evil. Now, we have some other great examples. One example that always is foremost in my mind is Joseph. I think we've mentioned it on another freedom journey, but Joseph, all the things that happened to him, his brothers envied him, were jealous of him. They plotted against how to get rid of him from their lives. You want to talk about evil? You want to talk about it, an epitome in human relations? You know, some of us had difficulty with our families and perhaps and estrangement and friends and relatives, members of a church we were a part of or whatever. You want to talk about that? They plotted to get him out of the family, and they did it through an evil enterprise that they would pretend like he died, and then they would sell him into slavery, never to see him again. You want to talk about evil and evil purposes in instruments. And lo and behold, God had a big plan in all that. In fact, let's see. In Genesis 50, verse 20, it says, when he, as probably our listeners know, eventually these brothers that did this to him show up in his presence because he's been made a ruler in Egypt. And he's been made a ruler in Egypt to preserve the nation of Egypt from a famine, and not only the nation of Egypt from a famine, but all the nations around about. And so they show up because they're starving to death, and they're going to get food from their brother that they hated and evil. And he says to them, but as for you, when he revealed himself to them, you thought evil against me, but God meant it for good to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. God saved Israel. He saved Egypt, but he saved Israel and all the regions around about who were in a desperate situation of famine. God saved them by this process of evil acts. And Joseph said, don't beat yourselves up for this. You know, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. God had a bigger plan. It's the big picture. Again, you can't focus on one act, you know, the slaying of an animal for supper. You can't focus on this one act. You've got to get back and see the bigger picture. So, you know, there's two great examples that we have from the scriptures of God's grand design to use the process of evil to bring the ultimate good. By the way, both of those are salvation. Calvary's salvation. The evil process brought the means of salvation. In Joseph in Egypt, the evil process saved people from starvation. It saved the nation Israel. So
I just had a random thought while you were saying he also saved Egypt, which 400 and some years later became evil.
Yes.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a whole new salvation. Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
And who was the main vessel of that? You know, Pharaoh.
Yeah.
And what does God say to Pharaoh? For this cause have I raised you up. God put Pharaoh on the throne and hardened his heart. I hardened his heart, God says. I hardened your heart. You know, why? Because he was going to have a showdown.
Yeah.
And the end result was, it was salvation, wasn't it? Yeah. In fact, Moses stands in the river, right? And he says, you know, behold, the salvation of God. And they walk through on dry ground, right? Yeah, awesome.
Question four. I have here, why does God allow, we kind of covered this already. I don't know if you have anything more to say about it. Why does God allow such horrendous acts like the abuse of children and women to occur if he's sovereign over all things? And that's kind of the worst of the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we object, we recoil from the worst examples that we can think of. One thing that I like that you say there in your question, you know, why does God allow? And we, those of us who've come to understand and embrace the sovereignty of God, we realize God doesn't allow anything. You know, you talked to begin with, couple hurricanes have come through in our season as we're recording this. And God didn't just allow those. They are all, every aspect of them is the foreknowledge and plan and predestination of God. And they're all fulfilling his purpose. So, you know, the comfort comes in knowing that God's not allowing this stuff to go on. And when we have, and when we're talking, we have this. And so we rest in this. You know, those we're sharing it with, if we understand them not getting it. You're not going to get this without divine realization. And so God has a plan. He's working it in absolute detail, in absolute precision, and he's working it for a broader plan with a point, with a destination, with a purpose. We can understand, all of us, this life is, you know, Job said that man was born into trouble as sparks fly upward. Of course, that's the King James. The concordance says, Job said, man is born into misery. Man's born into misery. Okay. So it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're a little child or, you know, you're fighting the final battle of old age. This life has a lot of misery. It's easy to focus in on what we think is the worst misery. But here's what we know, knowing and understanding God's purpose and plan, is that for every person who God has ever made, every creature, forget humanity, every creature God has ever made, they have a definite, distinct purpose in God's plan. And they have a definite fulfillment of that process. God has his sights on the end. You know, used to watch, was his name Bob Ross? Used to watch him on TV and he'd be painting these portraits and they, you know, they start off, look, PBS, I think, if I got the guy's name right. And he would start painting these paintings. They looked awful. He's throwing paint all over the place and it looks like a disaster. It looks like chaos. And then from the chaos, he brings this beautiful picture. And God's making a beautiful picture out of us. And here's what we don't know. We don't know the end from the beginning. Only God knows that. And we don't know what each person needs on the canvas of their life to make this perfect, fulfilled creature who's in bliss and harmony with God. We don't know what they need. God does. And we're... You know what? We're going to trust God. We're going to trust his sovereignty. We're going to trust his wisdom. We're going to trust his love. He loves, you mentioned children and women. You know, God loves children and women more than we do, more than anyone does. And so we got to remember all of this is born out of his love, you know. So, and sometimes in the maturing process and what you need to get from A to B, but ultimately to Z, which we can only see. We can only see Z in its concept, that it's the consummation. It's God's going to be all in all. It's going to be wonderful. None of us will wish we were somewhere else or somebody else. We will be fully fulfilled. And we can't see that, but we're trusting God in the process. You know, we have a saying on the dining room wall. I think it says, you know, when you can't see God's hand, trust his heart. You know, so when it doesn't make sense, we know him. And without realization, no one can have this great confidence that we possess. So where we see that is in a place like Romans 11:36. For out of him and through him and to him is all. I call this the divine cycle. Out of him is all. There's nothing in God's universe that's not a part of him. Nothing. It came out of him. That's the only way it got here. He is God. You know, so all is out of him, all is through him. So its operation and how it functions. In him we live and move and have our being. Everything is operating through God. And then, and here's the glorious part. And it's all going back to him. Women, children, young people, old people, all of our troubles, all of our trials. They're all a part of the divine cycle, which, so God is right here. It's the cycle. And in him is in the middle of that cycle, in him. And so in the middle of all the mess, God's right here, and it is him. The mess is him. And man, there's great comfort there. We can't explain. You know, I might watch a master chef, and I don't understand why he's doing certain things. Why did he need to whip that particular thing? I don't know, you know. But I know when at the end, it just all tastes good.
Well, and you think about the word allow. It's God reacting, you know. And so, you know, this storm, where am I going to allow it to hit? You know, do I love this guy more than this or whatever? And so you do have, if that was the case, you would have a reason to be angry with God, because he's allowing things. Yeah, why did he allow that, not allow this? But what you said about that God is, you know, sovereign, and he has a plan and he's following it through, and nobody gets cheated.
Nobody's getting cheated.
You know, it'll be made up to everyone. And
that's a message. That's the message of our dear brother Dean, isn't it? No one's going to get cheated. I love him saying that all the time. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's going to miss. Nobody's going to miss out. No. Just looks like it for the moment.
And that little girl that's being abused, God's going to make it up to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you did an interview recently with Mike Owens and resurrection, post-resurrection amazement. Yeah. See, on the other side, when there's resurrection and immortality and there's the consummation and everybody's going to go, it all makes perfect sense. Yeah. No one's going to have any objection because everything will have made sense. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? And, we're not smart enough to know the answer to any of those things. We're not God, but we trust in the sovereign God and the loving God. We trust him as Abba, Papa. We trust Papa. We know he loves us. We know he loves everyone. It's all good. Doesn't look like it. It's all good.
So, where am I at?
We're on number five.
Understanding the purpose, and we've kind of answered some of these questions. So how can understanding the purpose of evil bring peace and freedom to someone who's experiencing profound suffering? I think that's a good question.
It is.
Maybe doesn't understand this truth.
Yes. And it is a realization process. Now, of course, those who have the realization, we're able to attempt to share and communicate and comfort people with our realization, trusting that God would grant them realization in that process. We'd pray the prayer Paul in Ephesians chapter 1, that God would open people's eyes and understanding that they could see and have this realization. You know, so we're able to share that one. You know, a beautiful place we see this, Romans 8:28, for us who love God, who are the called according to his purpose, there's an awareness that God is working all together for good, or that God is operating all together for good, or God is energizing all together for good. All. Doesn't matter what it is. Those of us who've been called and we have this realization of God, we are aware of something. Very few people in Christianity have this awareness that God is operating all for good. Very few people in the world, of course, have this. You hear it come up every now and then. You'll hear that premonition come up. And, you know, they'll say, well, you know, this was meant to be. and in trying to think about that there is a absolute and loving authority behind it all. But we know that. And so we're able to take that and share that with others. Now, so we talk about someone who's facing a profound experience of suffering. One of the great experiences and profound experiences of suffering is one that almost all of us uniformly experience and are aware of, and it's death. Now, some people die really quickly, unexpectedly, and maybe nearly unconsciously. It happens so quick. But for most of us, death is quite the pinnacle of the experience of evil. Mortality is the unmovable fact of human life. The oldest lie in the scriptures is "you shall not surely die." We're all going to die, and perhaps one of the greatest points of suffering is the death of a child. It seems so premature, and as parents, we are supposed to die before our children. So it all seems unnatural. Now we know the beautiful testimony of Mike Owens and this tornado that made a straight course to his house and killed his son. And, you know, Mike is one of the greatest encouragements to me, holding the sovereignty of God without waver and the love of God without diminishment. And he struggled. He didn't understand the sovereignty of God. And he couldn't understand why God allowed this to happen. And so I love when he recounts the story, especially in a recent, an upcoming BSN, or a recent one. I think we have already published it, where he talks about the tornado brought him realization of the sovereignty of God. And he mentions in there that perhaps one of the most difficult things he has to do is to talk to other parents who've lost their children. And it's a very difficult thing to do, but he doesn't spare the message, because the message is the answer. It's the relief. God is absolutely sovereign. He's absolutely loving. And I wrote this down because he wrote this in the BSN, that one mother who had lost her child, and having had Mike explain this to her, she said, "You know, I'd rather know my daughter died as a part of God's sovereign plan than by some accident beyond his control." Okay. I get chill bumps thinking about that. You know, which would bring more peace? God either couldn't control it, or he just let it happen, he careless and unconcerned, or that with precision it was his plan. Well, you can take that to the peace bank. Sovereignty and love of God.
I love what you talked about when people are dying. Your wife was saying something to whisper in people's ear that, like, the hard part's about over.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. When my mother was dying, her mother was dying. But when my mother was dying, you know, right there at the end, and it was just so hard, where the ravages in this case of cancer had, you know, taken its evil toll. You know, she's able to say to her, you know, the hard part's almost all over now. it's going to be good from there on. The hard part's almost over. And that's the way it is, you know, we're going to go to sleep. And this was the hardest thing we ever had to do, like the climax of all the evil of our life. And then going to wake up in resurrection, you know, and we're able to whisper those things in people's ears, you know, whether it's death or any other situation. Hey, God loves you more than anybody else. And he's got this. He's not only got it, he designed it, and it's going to be good. You know, how wonderful is that?
And I like to think, you know, that when we know that when people die, they're dead. But for us, when we die, the resurrection is going to seem instantaneous.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So for people who's already died, you know, it's like, you know, maybe sometime as we get older, we may have trouble sleeping at night and maybe toss and turn for aches and pains or whatever. But that saying, you know, I slept like a baby, you know, a baby goes to sleep and wakes up and there's no consciousness of the time passing at all. It's just instantaneous. So for people who, when we die, because there's no knowledge in the grave, when we die, it's going to be the very next moment is going to be a glorious resurrection. So, you know, the only people suffering in death, in the process of being dead, is the people left behind.
Yeah.
Because we miss people. You know, I miss my mom. I miss my dad. You know, I miss the people in my life who no longer are here. I miss them experiencing things with me. And so we have the hard part after the death. Yeah. And they've got it easy because they're just going to see us next.
So this question is kind of related. Some people find the idea of God's sovereignty in the face of evil difficult to accept. How would you respond to someone who's struggling with this concept?
Yeah. Well, again, I think we've hit upon it a number of times. I like that we keep going over it, though, because Steve, you keep coming from a little different angle, which is good. But so we've already discussed this idea. It really takes divine realization to see and understand who God is, that he's loving and he's sovereign, and that's what fixes things. So ultimately, obviously, it's going to have to be the divine realization. But here's the process of thinking, and we just talked about it when I was talking about Mike Owens, and we were talking about the comfort that a woman received, that it wasn't some accident beyond God's control that took her child, but it was God's sovereign purpose and plan. Boy, great comfort right there. So here's the question that we ask is, how do we find comfort and peace? We're talking about freedom. How do we get free from all the pain of evil and all the discouragement and the depression of evil that is all around us, the fear of evil? And it's in the realization of God's sovereignty of love. So here's a question for us. Is it more comforting to think that God allows everything to happen by chance? Is there great peace in that? Like everything's random and everything's disasters are meaningless. They have no purpose. Things are just out of control. Is that where we find, does that sound peaceful? You know, because we have to ask ourselves, these people who would object that this is God's plan and we're telling them this brings us peace. Well, what brings them peace? You know, that God's letting everything happen by chance. Yeah, is that peaceful? You know, or we might say, is it more comforting to think that God has allowed us to control everything? You know, so now I'm going to control how the day goes. Man, would that bring me peace in the morning? You know, or would it bring me peace at the end of the day of all that stuff I did? You know, there's no peace in chance. There's no peace in us being in control. Or someone would say, well, you know, if it's not God who's in control, and it's not us who is in control, well, then it's Satan who's in control. He's behind all this bad stuff. Well, is that comforting to know that Satan's sovereign and in control of everything? You'd never have peace about anything. I couldn't wake up in the morning because I don't know when I'm going to be struck by his evil plan. So real, solid, lasting peace and joy and comfort, the freedom of that comes in the absolute knowledge, or the knowledge, the realization of the absolute sovereignty of God and his love for us. There is no comfort in chance. There is no comfort in humanity. There is no comfort in Satan. And the only perfect comfort comes in God. You know, right now as we make this podcast, you know, we're just days away from an election. And, you know, people are in a frenzy, okay, that their candidate get in, or maybe more likely they're hoping the candidate they hate doesn't get in, and somehow they think they're in charge and they're going to vote and change this and they're going to somehow fix this, or the person they vote for is going to fix everything. And I'm going to tell you what, that there is no peace in any of that. There is no comfort in any of that, because the political process and the governmental process of the world are evil, just like is religion and everything else. And they all have a divine purpose. And our freedom in this journey comes in relinquishing all that and knowing Dad's got this. You know, your grandchild saying, I got this. And we say, God's got this. And better than God, Dad's got this. Papa's got this.
So it's a good lean into the next question. What is the role of human free will in the presence of evil, and how does it fit into God's sovereign plan?
Well, yeah.
Probably can answer that with two words.
What's that?
You can answer that with two words, right?
I love the way you asked that, because I know you know the answer. And the thing is that the whole point is that human free will is just simply a myth. And it has no place. Human free will has no place in God's plan. It is an absolute myth. And we are all products of the environment that God has created us to be in, genetically, DNA, who our parents were, every experience we've had along the way, you know, where we were born in history, where we were born on the planet. There's no free will. There's only one free will in the universe, and that belongs to God. That's where peace is. If you have free will, and I've got free will, my neighbor's got free will, and everybody who's voting's got free will, and all the people in political power's got free will, and if everybody's got free will, we are in a hopeless situation, and you'll never have any peace. But if God's the only one who has free will, sovereignty, we can go to sleep at night. Whatever happens in the night, he wrote it. It's already written. Whatever happens tomorrow, he already wrote. So peace and comfort reside in the realization of the sovereignty and love of God. And that's the place in our journey where we can, Psalm 46:10, relax and know that I am Elohim. It comes from a knowledge of Elohim, realization of Elohim. Then we can relax.
So I just read this recently. It says that all the decisions, all the plans were made by God before the foundation of the world, or the destruction of the world. And he hasn't made anything new since then.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So he's not reacting in any way. This was set and planned a long time ago. And
yeah. Yeah. God's not having any new ideas.
No.
You know, he came up with some plan, you know, eons ago. He came up with some plan, and he's getting all these cool ideas along the way. He's getting smarter, rising up. So he's making adjustments. He's, you know, so, you know, one day he doesn't say, "Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do next." Because he knows the end from the beginning. That's what makes him God. I love this quote from someone that I respected when I was a young man. And he'd say, you know, did it ever occur to you that nothing's ever occurred to God?
You and I like to brainstorm and think of ideas and come up with all that stuff, but God never brainstormed.
Exactly. Yeah. And even our brainstorming is just us carrying out the action. Yeah. We're acting through the character that God wrote.
And here we think we're so smart. Here's one of my favorite questions. What hope or comfort does Scripture offer regarding the ultimate demise and destruction of evil?
Yeah. Oh, well, great comfort. You know, the wonderful thing we know from Scripture is that evil's not permanent. Evil is a tool. And when God's done with the tool, he's going to put the tool aside. He's going to cast it away. So this is the glorious thing. All the difficulties of life are temporary. They're transitory. And in due course, God's going to right every wrong. He's going to correct everything that has been affected by evil. And he is, in essence, going to destroy evil. Frank Neil Pohorelak, I love this quote by him. I have it written here. He says, "God ushered evil into the world, and he will escort it out when it has accomplished its purposes." So when God, in the consummation, when God is all in all, remember he gave man an experience to evil to humble him. Well, when we have sufficiently understood that God is all in all, he is all there is, and that's our life. We relish and rejoice and live in him to its fullness. Then evil will have accomplished his purpose, and he'll get it out of here. You know what? Here's what we need to understand is that judgment in the Scriptures is not punishment. It's not it's not tit for tat. Judgment in the Scriptures setting things right. And God's going to fix everything. He's going to fix all our heartaches, all our aches and pains, all our dissatisfactions, all our disappointments, all the bitterness and hurt and anger. He's going to fix everything. You know, we're going to all be winners. And in that final state, then he's going to remove evil, and it's going to be glorious. It will have accomplished its purpose.
And the last enemy that destroyed is the most evil thing of all.
Yes. Death.
Death.
Yep.
And then we're done with all that.
We're going to be done.
We're going to be done. How does understanding the temporary nature of evil shape our view of God's ultimate plan for humanity?
Yeah, well, another good question. You know, because we know that God introduces and brings man to this experience of evil so that he may humble him. Once that has accomplished, he's going to take it out of the way. And of course, God will be all in all. So what are we talking about in the consummation? We're talking about restoration, reconciliation, harmony, peace. All these things are going to be achieved in the Father. And then once they are, that temporary agitation in contrast to all that will be removed. Again, I think it's good to look at those words that could be synonyms of evil and realize they're going to be gone. The adversary is going to be gone. Affliction's going to be gone. Calamity, displeasure, distress, grief, harm, hurt, illness, mischief, misery, trouble, vexation, wickedness, you know, all these things, wrong is going to be gone. Beautiful.
So you were telling me some time ago about this lady who says she can't wait to see Hitler holding little Jewish children.
Yes. Actually, it was my son. My son was communicating with us. This lady who they were communicating on the salvation of all. And she had come to see this, and she was shocked that my son knew anything, you know, knew something about it. And so they were talking, and she's like, I can't wait for the day, you know, to see. In her mind, this was the pinnacle of reconciliation, the pinnacle of consummation. I can't wait to see Hitler and all these little Jewish kids in his lap and hanging on him, and he's loving them and having fun with them. You know, in her mind, that was like the epitome illustration of reconciliation and of God being all in all. It's going to be wonderful.
And from our history, you know, it's kind of the worst of the worst. And just to see that. Because that's a question often gets asked. You mean even Hitler? Yeah.
Even Hitler. Yeah.
So to finish this off, what practical steps can believers take to trust in God's sovereignty when confronted with evil and suffering they see around them?
Well, all of us, even things we know and realize, you know, moment by moment, we can forget them just for a moment. We forget, we get caught up. Some circumstance happens and you know, we're in the shock emergency mode. So for me, and I think for all of us, it's just important to ever keep in mind, in the forefront of our mind, that we look beyond the vessel where this evil's coming from. We look beyond the servant that's bringing this vessel, the agent, and we see God behind everything. All the actions of evil, as well as everything else, are God's servants. The evil is God's servant, so he's behind it. And if we can see that, we can calm down. We can take a breath. God uses these things with great wisdom and love. So what I'm talking about here is the great effect in our lives is seeing God in everything. In everything we see him, because he is. Out of him is all, through him is all, back to him all. And if we can see that, what great peace. Two great examples of that, Job. So all this calamity came from Satan through other instruments as well. The storm came and all the evils that came. Job lost his family, his children. He lost his possessions, his homes, his livestock, he lost his livelihood, he lost his health. And Job could easily blame this on storms, disease. He could easily blame it on Satan, who was clearly an agent behind all that physical stuff. Job refused to look at the disease. He refused to look at the storm. He went further. He refused to look at Satan as the source. And he went back straight to the cause of all things. He went straight back to God. And here's what he said in Job 1:21. The Lord gave. Let's think specifically about his children. The Lord gave. and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He knew all was out of God, all was through God, and all was going back to God. If we know that about everything, this family member or friend or associate that hurts us so badly, we can be mad at them. We can have anger against them. We can hold a grudge against them. If we see they're only a vessel, they're only an agent, and whose vessel are they? Whose agent are they? God's. So God did this to me. Not Fred. God did this to me. So if I'm angry at Fred, I'm angry at God. If I'm peeved and resentful and going to hold this against Fred, I'm holding it against God. It fixes things when we bring to bear on everything that's happening at all. So look beyond the shadows, look beyond the actors, look beyond the agents, and know who is the one in charge, designed it, executing it. It's God. You know, another great example of someone who did that is Paul. Paul's arrested by Roman soldiers. He's placed in Roman prison. We've talked about this before, I think, right here on our freedom journey. He is a warden is there and prison guards. And he could curse his chains. He could curse the guards and the warden. He could curse Rome. Surely if there was ever government worth cursing, it would be Rome. We think we live in some bad government. And you know what does Paul say when he writes his epistle? I'm a prisoner of Christ Jesus. Man, that little, it's not little, that big adjustment makes prison all okay. Makes the chains okay. Makes the bad or lack of food okay. It makes everything good because we have an awareness that God is working all together for good. And so now how does that play out practically? Well, we know that God has vessels. Vessels for destruction. Vessels of evil. For this cause have I raised thee up. But he's also raised us up for something. And we're the vessels of mercy. Here's what we need to know about vessels. They don't manufacture anything. You know, a teapot, it doesn't manufacture the coffee. The coffee's put in it. And a glass, a coffee cup, it doesn't manufacture something. It contains something. So we contain something. Everybody we meet contains something. They're not its origin. They didn't manufacture it. And we're the vessels of God's mercy. And so we're not fatalist. We're not saying, oh, well, que sera, sera. Oh, whatever will be, will be. We're not fatalist about this. We realize we're the vessels of mercy in the middle of all this. We're the ones whispering in someone's ear, hey, the hard part's almost all over now. And God loves you more than anybody else. And if they're fearing leaving their wife or children, and what will be there, say, hey, you know what? God loves your wife more than you do. It's okay. She's in good hands. Whatever it is, we're just spreading mercy, love, kindness, peace, gentleness. We're not creating it. We're not manufacturing it. We're a container. God's pouring in the grace so that we could do what? Have intellectual debates with people about the nature of grace, or that we're living the grace and manifesting it. So God is right now showing a great contrast to evil. and we're the vessels designed to pour it out. So when you see all that evil, you're not going to fix that. What you're going to do is we're doing something different. You know, and it's glorious, and it's freedom. This is a freedom journey we're on.
Wow, that's a great way to end this podcast. Thanks everyone for watching and listening, and I hope it is helpful for you as it's been for me, and we'll see you the next time.